Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 87 of the Uncovered podcast. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango on Twitter. And with me, as always, back from vacation, is Jared Kimber, who you can find literally everywhere. Lots of stuff to talk about with respect to off-the-field cricket news. That is what Uncovered is now all about. And we'll start off with Mitchell Starc giving an interview in which he kind of hinted towards what his future is going to look like, Jared. He said that he thoroughly enjoyed his experience at the IPL after so many years. He wants to be back next year, but he also wants to play, you know, test cricket for Australia. And of course, if he's playing T20 cricket, he might as well continue to play for Australia over there as well. But he hinted towards potentially retiring from the ODI format to prolong his career. Of course, he must have enjoyed the money as well from the IPL. So he's probably thinking along the lines of more franchise gigs across the globe. And then, of course, we all know how much he wants to play 100 test matches as well. He's made that very evident in his interviews, the past. So, yeah, what's your take on all of that?
I'm surprised we haven't seen more players do it straight after the ODI World Cup. I think if I was a player, that's what I would do. I think there's more money in Test cricket and T20 cricket at the moment. And as long as your T20 cricket doesn't need ODI cricket to back it up and, you know, get attention and everything else, probably what I would do. I'd play the one that I like the most, which still pays a lot of money, especially if you're an Australian cricketer. And I'll play the other one that hopefully I can get a couple more huge paydays and get some sponsorship. And, you know, he's a potential commentator and all sorts of things. Mitchell Starc, I think, going into the future, right? So makes sense to do that, you know, maybe pop into Major League Cricket. And was it Pat Cummins signed up for the Major League Cricket, I think, recently?
Has he?
I think that's right, yeah. So Mitchell Starc might do a similar thing, PSL, you know, IL, T20, whatever you want into the future. So, yeah, I've got no issue with players doing that. You pick the one that makes sense for your life and your career at that time and go with it. Not your fault that cricket is split awfully in this stupid way.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense for him because he's an aging fast bowler. And I mean, I don't expect him to play every single test match for Australia because they've got options. They're going to, you know, bench him every now and then, keep him fit and raring to go. And I mean, T20 cricket is ultimately just four overs in a game. So it's not as, you know, massive a workload, but tournaments are long. Anyway, do you think he's going to go down the Anderson route in test cricket? Do you think we'll see him for a long time?
I would have to have a look at how good he's been in test cricket for a while. I don't think they're massively looking at moving on from him or anything. And I'm not sure there's a bowler that's going to take his spot instantly. But I don't think, you know, in the last few years when fast bowlers have been absolutely dominating, so this year in five tests, he's averaged 32. The year before, 29. The year before, 28. The year before, 23. 2019, 2020... he averaged 20. He's not a sure selection, is he? Into the future?
Yeah, I mean
that's a fine record, but it's not a sensational one.
It depends on whether or not they can produce more left-arm quicks. Is there anyone in the Sheffield Shield circuit who's caught your eye?
Well, Spencer Johnson is the one, right? Like, that is natural. Although I think he should be in this squad as cover for Mitchell Starc in case he has troubles. And he's not.
I haven't looked at Spencer's first-class numbers. I know he's good in shorter formats, but you know,
I mean, he hasn't played much cricket at all. And they might be thinking that if they play him in test cricket, his body will break again. But he's played five first class games. He's got a bowling average of 26 in those, but it's not exactly from a lot. There's nothing in the way he bowls that I think he couldn't be good in first class cricket, in test cricket or first class cricket. But yeah, so it's not just about left arm bowlers, though, is it? You know, Jai Richardson, if he ever gets fully fit, is obviously another potential person to take over. They've got a bunch of other fast bowlers that maybe they think of as slightly faster than Mitchell Starc these days that could come through.
Xavier Bartlett is one of them that they've been eyeing.
Yeah. Riley Meredith is still kind of on their radar, right? Like, you know what I mean? They might just be like, well, Mitchell Starc isn't that fast anymore and he doesn't really terrorize anyone anymore. If we can find someone else who can do that, maybe that's the direction that they go in. So yeah, I think they might go in that direction. And so again, I think this helps him. He's probably not going to play in the next ODI World Cup, right? So why is he? And he doesn't play that many ODI games anyway. So if you take that away from him, he can work out his schedule a little bit more. I've got no issue there.
Yeah. Hypocaust has pointed out that, of course, he you know, he's asking us where we would rank him as an ODI great, but we all know that that's his format. Mitchell Starc is synonymous with ODI cricket. Yeah. That's where he's best at. So that's an interesting conundrum over here, giving up your best format, right? Which, I don't know. I mean, he's probably thought out this in terms of, fatigue, workload, and then the money, which all makes sense to me.
ODI cricket is probably not his best format now, though. Last two or three years, it's probably Test cricket at the moment. And then, you know, he's hoping that he can make it T20 cricket as well. You know, we saw Josh Hazlewood get a lot better at T20 cricket when he just started playing it a lot. Mitchell Starc might be thinking, well, I was even better than Josh when I played it a lot. So maybe I can get back to that level. I think Mitchell Stark's probably a top 10 ODI bowler of all time. That's just off the top of my head. I'd have to go through the numbers. But, certainly he had two of the greatest World Cups back to back that anyone's ever had. And when he did play in between, he was pretty fantastic. So he was a fantastic player. But if he's not going to play in 4 years' time, so what would have happened in the past? Is my question to you. I reckon in the past, if we're talking 30 or 40 years ago, he probably keeps playing one day cricket, but his heart's not really in it. And then eventually he loses form and they get rid of him, right? What happens probably, 10, 15, 20 years ago before T20 was around, is they probably say to him, are you going to play in the next World Cup? And he says, it's maybe a little bit too far from me. And they go, okay, well, are you happy just to be a test match bowler? And he goes, yeah. Every day, every period is different, right? And every career is different. And so I do think you have to look at it from that perspective. But, for me, makes the most sense where he is. And, you know, if there was a World Cup in 2 years' time, he probably wouldn't do this. But there isn't. Yeah. So it makes more sense at, how old is he, 34? Probably not going to be playing in a World Cup at 37, 38.
There is a Champions Trophy in less than a year, but I don't know if he really looks at the Champions Trophy in that way.
I mean, if it's a home Champions Trophy or, you're from a team who doesn't win a lot, I reckon maybe that is something that you'd be like, great, I'll go out there. And I think for an Australian player, and Australians don't take the Champions Trophy as seriously as other teams anyway. Traditionally, they might be at the moment, but they traditionally haven't. I think he just goes, nah, it's not, I don't care.
I do feel that leaving overall cricket will be something that Mitchell Starc is never going to do. He gives me that Anderson-esque vibe at times. Jimmy recently said on the Tailenders pod that 90% of the times he's happy with his decision, but 1 out of 10 days he wakes up and thinks he wants to continue to play more, right? Which is a very Jimmy Anderson thing to say. And I get that energy from Starc. I feel like this is someone who still has a lot of hunger to perform on the field. For some reason, even at age 34, I feel like we're going to see him in one format or another for a long, long time. That's just my gut feeling. Anyway, let's move forward to Usama Mir, the latest Pakistani cricketer to have his NOC cancelled. He was set to make over $63,000 at the Vitality Blast, but now he's going to not go there because of his cancelled NOC. And that is because he has signed a Category D central contract with Pakistan, through which he earns $4,000 a month. Massive difference over there. And not the first time we're seeing this. Again, it's that same old rule that you can only play two other franchise tournaments apart from the PSL per year. But the Vitality Blast is not even a franchise tournament. It's a domestic competition, a club competition. They've done him dirty, really dirty. Even though he wasn't even selected for this World Cup. He's playing no cricket. Let the man play. He's a spinner, for crying out loud.
Yeah. what would he be doing if he wasn't playing in the Blast?
Right now, nothing. Pakistan had the option to have their backup wrist spinner upskilling in England and have him as a reserve player. If someone gets injured, you ship him in. But they've opted to, have him sit in Pakistan, play no cricket, and also take a massive, cut in terms of financials, because over 63,000 USD compared to 4,000 USD per month is significant, right?
It just feels like to me that they wanted to, make an example. And we've talked about this before. They did this with Harris Ralph as well.
Yeah.
The world's changing.
This with Mohammad Harris as well.
Yeah. Remember? And I just think that they're putting themselves in a position where, why would I care about my board anymore? Why not I try and just go completely freelance? Why would I ever sign a contract like that? So that's how I feel about it externally. I don't know if that's, you know, we'd have to talk to the PCB about their reasoning and everything else. Then if you ask me from a cricket point of view, I'm like, well, if he's not playing, is this not the perfect situation to say, okay, what would you be doing otherwise? And if they say working in Pakistan, could he not make the claim from a cricket perspective that it would be worth him doing this? And if they're worried about the money, could he not be contracted for that period of time from the PCB so he's not paid double?
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
This is how cricket should work. But there are lots of, I know lots of people who work with governments, and you work with the government for a little while. And obviously you don't make a lot of money because you're working for a government, right? Unless you're corrupt. Well done if you are. You don't make a lot of money working for a government. And then, but within government jobs, there's usually opportunities to go off and work in the private sector for a couple of years. Make your money, learn new skills, and bring those things back. So you're a better employer, you're happier, your mortgage is paid off, whatever it may be, and you go about your work. They have a situation where that this could benefit them, right? In multiple ways. And they haven't done that. And look, I get the rule. I do think it's illegal. And I'm not saying it is in Pakistan, but I do think it's what should be illegal to restrict the trade of a player, of a person who can only earn for 15 years. I don't like that. I don't like the way those contracts are talked about. And you and I have done those podcasts before. So everyone knows how I feel about that. But this just seems like a situation where it's like, okay, there was nothing else going on. Use it when there's something else going on, right? Use it when they're overworked. Leg spinner, that's probably not going to happen. You want your leg spinners to probably play outside of Asia so they keep building on their skill sets. And he's not a complete bowler yet. He actually needs a lot of work.
I mean, he played the 100 last year, and then during the Big Bash, which he was also playing, they pulled him out midway to play for Pakistan. I understand that.
That's fine.
This I don't understand. And Mohsin Naqvi needs to realize, the PCB chairman, that he could have set a precedent of flexibility over here, which actually makes his players happy. But he's again he's gone for that strong-arming option. And they need to realize that players will, you know, consider retirement. They're going to lose more players. I mean, Zafar Gohar was a fantastic talent in Pakistan who now plays his cricket at Gloucester, I believe. And I think he has aspirations to maybe qualify for England someday.
Yep.
I would not be surprised if Usama takes the same route. And I would actually encourage him to, because, you know, he's going to end up making more money. So it's really like, it's all in shambles. And I do not want to talk about the PCB anymore. Let's move forward. The Uganda jersey fiasco. I'm not sure if you read this, Jared, but the sleeves of Uganda's T20 World Cup jersey came out of this contest that they did of jersey designs.
Yep.
And they were based off of Uganda's national bird, the grey-crowned crane. Something cranes is also their nickname. It was beautiful. I don't know if you saw that jersey or not. It was a yellow jersey with this feathered pattern on the sleeves. And that created issues because that feathered pattern on the sleeves was camouflaging the sponsor's logo, which is why the ICC forced Uganda to remove the feathered pattern from the sleeves. They've toned it down by several degrees, so much so that you can't even see the pattern anymore. It's just like barely a silhouette now. And I find that really unfortunate.
Uganda's had some good shirts over the last couple of years. I thought this one was a little weak. But now hearing this, I'm even more upset. Look, the truth is that these sorts of things happen when you get to the top level of professional cricket. Like, do you know what I mean? The sort of things that you wouldn't worry about beforehand suddenly become an issue. And it's the same for you. You know, you work on my podcast, you will then work for the BBC or TalkSport or wherever it may be, you know, a radio station in Pakistan. Then you work in TV. You realize that there are, as you go up, different things become more and more important. I once got told off on the BBC for saying the word, for saying the phrase on the piss, right? Which is, to me, a very normal Australian thing that you would say, but on the BBC, and that's how these things work. It's absolutely fine. That's kind of what Uganda are finding here. It's disappointing that it's happened to them, and unfortunate, but it probably won't be the worst thing that happens to them this World Cup, if we're being honest. Although the way it's going, they might win it with some of the weird games that we've seen.
I mean, it was a, you know, fairy tale sort of story when they qualified for this T20 World Cup. It's the first time they're featuring. So here's to hoping the jersey fiasco doesn't impact their performance. Anyway, we're halfway through our, topics on Uncovered. So we're going to be taking a short break. You're with Jared and Behram on Uncovered. Stay tuned. We'll be back after this short ad.
Cricket 8 brings you this show. They are a new player in the game trying to educate fans on what is really happening in cricket. Head over for their watch-alongs, podcasts and articles on what is happening on the field and why it matters. Cricket 8 is your place for cricket intelligence.
Welcome back to Uncovered. You guys are with Jared and Behram. And the next thing that we have to talk about, Jared, is actually something that I really wanted to pick your brain on. It's Brydon Carse's suspension.
Ah.
Now, Durham cricketer, who's also played for England, not a lot, but he's featured for England in a few international games. He's been banned for 3 months, and he's also copped a 13-month suspension, which will kick in after 2 years, I believe. And that is because he accepted charges of breaching cricket's anti-corruption rules by placing 303 bets on a variety of cricket matches between 2017 and 2019. There is no confirmation of him placing bets on games that he was involved in. And apparently, if you're part of a cricket team in any sort of capacity, you can place bets on any sort of cricket. He has displayed remorse, but he was someone that Rob Key in particular had mentioned as a potential, you know, seam bowling option in the West Indies test matches. He's going to miss out now.
Yeah, it's big, isn't it? From that kind of, would you retire Jimmy Anderson now if you knew this was going to happen? Look, it doesn't look like there's any wrongdoing there outside of, you know, the very basic thing that you just said, that he was betting on cricket matches. So it isn't like Jonte Porter, the NBA player, who was obviously involved with people betting on his performances. At the moment, it doesn't seem like that. It's a stupid thing to do. I've worked with cricket a fraction of the amount of time that Brydon Carse has, and I've been in so many of those meetings where you're told not to do all those sorts of things. I know ex-players who still don't bet on cricket just because it's kind of like, oh, should I be doing that? Like, you know, like that, they're so used to that sort of stuff. It's a real shame. I think there needs to be a really thorough investigation of it, and I think it should be done independently. I don't know what the ECB have done at the moment, but I would like to know a lot more about this. I'm not willing to ruin Brydon Carse's career, but was he getting information from other players that he was betting on? Was he hearing rumors? You know, all the things that he shouldn't be doing. Was he texting his friends and asking them things? And if that was the case, then this is a little bit dodgier, right? All those things are really, really important, and hopefully the ECB have already done it, but I haven't seen, I've only really seen the headlines. So if I've missed that and someone else would say that, but it should be done independently and should be done properly. But yeah, it's a setback for them as a team because he was supposed to be playing. And also, you know, I know he's not young, but for a player who's still coming through to international cricket, it's not really the way you want to be first sort of known internationally as the guy who did this, right?
I mean, they've had that with a few of their cricketers, right? Ollie Robinson comes to mind, who broke onto the scene and then had all these negative headlines around him. Carse is sort of on a similar path, but different, obviously, because on one hand, you had racism, and on this end, you have like potential gambling, right? I mean, there's gambling for sure. We just don't know if there was any ill will and whether or not he was actually, you know, corrupting the game. But I hope there is a thorough independent investigation as well. I believe some representative from the ECB said that, you know, they appreciate Carse's remorse and the fact that he's accepted these charges and that they believe that he's matured as an individual in these last 5 years. But yeah, not too sure on whether they're going to do more about it or not. And also, I do not understand the delayed 13-month suspension. That's like, you can play now, but at one point in your career, we'll not let you play for a year. So I don't know how that works.
Yeah, it feels icky, that sort of stuff. But, you know, that's what I mean. I kind of feel like it feels a little bit like the Shane Warne, Mark Wall thing, where the cricket board's just trying to, like, push it to the side. And it's like, yeah, we need to know if this is a little bit more serious. And when you release a fact like that, it pricks up your ears and it pricks up my ears a little bit as well of, wait a minute, what's actually happening here? So I would like to know more about the whole thing. If it's just him betting and, you know, whatever, he's only really exploited the betting agencies if he's made any money. But if it is him trying to get information off people or anything else, then anything else at all along those lines, then he should, you know, there needs to be a thorough look into it from ACSU standpoint. I don't, because it's domestic, I think there were domestic games he bet on, if I'm not mistaken. At least the ones that I saw mentioned were I don't think the ICC should be involved, but I do kind of think this is why the ICC should be involved in all these, because they are independent and ECB are not independent, right?
Yeah. Also, I mean, what they really should be doing is going to the betting company and asking them what sort of bets were made, right? If they're random player bets, then that is a red flag. If they're like always, oh, this team will score X amount of runs in 10 overs, then maybe he was just having a bit of fun.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think that's fair. That's why it needs a proper investigation. And I'm not saying the ECB haven't done it. I haven't followed the story enough. But you do actually need to go through his phone records and see which teams he was betting on, at what time he was betting on, and whether he was contacting any of these players via social media or via WhatsApp or calling them or whatever. Because I think that is a lot more serious. And that is not just betting on cricket games. That is going to that next level. And it may not be, it's not match fixing, but it's a match fixing based offense at that point.
It's insider trading.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
And so, you know, it's all a little bit icky. And also those sorts of things can lead to bad things. That's why we have these rules in place.
Yeah, absolutely. Just a quick question on this. Mm-hmm. We know, and you always tell us of your trades and everything. So you're actively, participating. Let's say you were to do some consultancy work as a freelancer for some sort of team. You would have to give that up, right?
As a freelancer consulting, no. But if I work for a team, I have to give it up. So if I get a job with a team or if I'm... but also, you can't do it in the press box either.
True.
So there's a few times when I would not be able to trade on cricket games. So being in the press box is certainly one of them. Working as an analyst for a team... I wouldn't be able to do that. So no one involved with the team, which goes back to the Guru Mayappan days, is allowed to be betting on cricket, especially that particular tournament that they're working on. I can't remember how far it goes out. But you're certainly not allowed to be betting on that particular tournament that you're involved with. So I remember ACSU contacting me about when I was working for a team to ask me if this person that they suspected was betting was actually part of the team or not, because they couldn't work out if he was just a hanger-on who just knew the ownership group or whatever it was. I can't even remember the full details of it now. So that's how full-on they take all those sorts of things, and they certainly look into it a lot more. But yeah, so if I'm working for Scotland, I can't be betting on the Scotland qualifiers, for instance. But also, you can also ask what you can and can't do. The ACSU people... In my experience with them, I know about three or four of them. One of them lives around the corner from me, actually. You can just go and ask them stuff, right? Like, I remember, little things like players were saying, what if we get gifts? Do we have to, do we have to do that? And do we get to keep the gifts? I remember that being one thing, because a player was given an iPhone by someone. Hmm. And so he went to ACSU and said, can I keep the iPhone? And I can't remember what the ruling on that was. This player was just like, look, I'm more than happy to tell you that this happened. Someone has given me this gift. It's worth like $500. So obviously they want favors from me. But what happens with the phone? Like, who gets the phone now? That's a valid question. You can have those conversations. And, as I said, Brighton Cars, I've never done it in the press, which they should do it with the press as well. But I've been in at least four of those meetings as a person who works on cricket teams before. And yeah, these sorts of things come up over and over and over again.
All right, coming to our last talking point, which is probably the biggest one. The crowd in Guyana for West Indies' tournament opener in the T20 World Cup was quite underwhelming. Lots of those stands were empty-ish. And the scheduling of, the games has come up as a big talking point. Our colleague Cheyenne wanted to talk about this as well. And I told him to, stay tuned.
You told him he's not allowed on the podcast.
Yeah, I said that we're definitely covering this on Uncovered. So, I mean, we see all of the major games get the morning slot because, of course, that aligns with the Indian subcontinent, prime time, time slot. And I'm not sure what the cricket pricing is. Someone told me that for the Guyana game, it was $40 to $70. I don't know, if that's a good price for people who live in Guyana, a bad price, not quite sure over there. But one thing that we know for sure is that the broadcasters are catering to the subcontinent audience, more importantly, the Indian audience. And at least from my perspective, the West Indies and USA should get night games. It's their home World Cup, right?
Well, I mean, I would assume that that West Indies versus Papua New Guinea is not a massive game, right? So I would assume that it was played at that time and that West Indies are involved with it. I'd be shocked if they changed that game for the Indian market. I mean, overall, these things happen. If you look at swimming in the Olympics is a famous one. So how many countries really care about swimming, right? It's like Australia and America, right? There are other countries that are good at it, but they're the two countries that are kind of, you know, really obsessed with it. And Australians always get upset because the finals are obviously always played at prime time for an American audience, because that is the audience that pays more money, right? Like that, their TV rights are worth a lot more than Australian TV rights. And I've been upset as an Australian at that before, not that much about swimming, but about other things. And, you know, I can understand that. This is where they are making their money. That particular game doesn't make any sense to me to make that as something for the Indian audience, but they are clearly splitting these games up. It was also in the, you know, it was at a weird time. It was on a weekend, wasn't it? So it wasn't, is that right? Was it Sunday? I'm trying to remember what day of the week it was.
Yeah, it was. Wait, yes, it was Sunday. Yeah. You're right.
So it was a weekend and a day game. Like, you'd still expect more people to go out in Guyana than actually, you know, went out there. Guyana has great crowds at times, but I don't know. Maybe it was too hot. Maybe it was, you know, it, maybe something else was clashing with it. I don't know. But broadcast, things are broadcast when you can make the most money off them. That is how these things work. And we've seen it enough times now with the Olympics and World Cup. You know, a lot of the World Cups in football have had sometimes, you know, weirder games for different markets as well. Capitalism and money is the reason that the World Cup still exists. So we can fight it, but realistically, if because it makes money, it continues to be played. It's not perfect from that point of view. You know, and the ticket pricing obviously hasn't been particularly good for some of these games. Not all in the USA, I've heard lots of stories about not all the tickets being released correctly and all sorts of things, right? So there are issues with ticketing when it comes to this tournament. It's not perfect, but, you know, we can't have every tournament in India, England, and Australia either, right? They have to be spread out to other places. And occasionally when we spread them out to other places, we're probably going to have games at weird times. That is something that is going to happen. This is not going to be the only time it ever happens in cricket. I can promise you that now.
Yeah, no, that I'm definitely aware of. Hypocaustis told us in the comments that there were some stands in this Sri Lanka versus South Africa game in which the tickets were priced between $250 to $600 US dollars. That is insane.
Yeah.
I still think the crowd, like the turnout wasn't bad for a 10 a.m. game in New York on a Monday, right? Like we saw what, 10, 14,000 people, which isn't terrible. But if you want this World Cup to be a success, you're going to have to look at all of those things. And ticket pricing is probably the biggest thing.
There's two conflicting things happening at the same time here, right? And this is where cricket mostly fucks up. We want to move cricket to America and we want to break into the American market. And we're very desperate for that. But we're also not going to spend a whole lot of time to make sure that the grounds are ready. Right? And then we're going to play games.
We're going to create a ground in 5 months and make sure the outfield is quicksand.
And then the first game is going to be at 10 a.m. on a Monday morning. Right?
Yeah.
You can't have it both ways. If you really wanted to invest and make this the USA World Cup, then you need to do things properly. And this is where cricket's big issue is that the ICC doesn't actually have that much money of its own. Right. And if this was done, if the ICC was actually in charge, I guess they would have spent a couple of years making sure there was a good pitch there and they would have invested and, you know, and, you know, and done things. But instead, it's been done on the cheap at like, you know, in the last minute. And so we have a crappy ground. And then they're like, but we still have to make our money from India. So we get the worst of both worlds. We get a pitch that isn't up to standard and the game played at the wrong time for the audience to come for. It's proper cricket. That's all it is. Proper cricket. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I mean, let's see if the remainder of the World Cup sees better surfaces in the USA. I mean, Dallas is good to go. And I feel like I can even deal with Guyana, right? Massive dimensions, fine. Sometimes cricket needs that, right? Slow surface, massive dimensions. And we're getting a game where 145 to 150 is a good score. I'm game. I'm not game with 77 all out. That's the thing. And they did kind of hurry through this. And that's why we saw those sort of playing conditions. That's why we're seeing these haphazard, you know, scheduling issues. There's one day next week where we have four games. So it'll be a bitch to cover, but we'll get through.
Yeah. And again, I understand all that sort of stuff. And, you know, there are some things that I really like about playing four games in one day from a perspective of, you know, points and group tables and all those sorts of things. But we're not here because we've made a series of good decisions. Cricket isn't big in America because of how it was run for 150 years. We are not going to overcome it with 5 months of preparation and a Monday morning game between South Africa and Sri Lanka.
This is brought to you by Cricket 8. Cricket intelligence for you every day.
Yeah, I think that pretty much sums it up. Let's see, though. Maybe this is an inflection point in cricket in the USA. We're actually going to do an entire Footmarks on that sort of stuff. So you guys stay tuned for that. Time for some super chats. Pathright Winger, once again, with a super chat, says, just went through your great Raina content. Couldn't help but realize Shreyas Iyer has a Raina-esque deficiency in his game, unlike Rahane. Is he a liability for the upcoming Border Gavaskar Trophy? He doesn't have a central contract, Path. I think you missed that part. I don't think he's going to be part of that team.
Yeah, I look, I think they would struggle to take him to Australia as he currently is. This is where I think cricket teams need to get a lot better. He's probably never going to be a great player of short pitch bowling and fast bowling because that's not his major skill set. So they are going to have to make sure they prepare him and get him ready for things like that. If you just throw him in, chances are he will fail. And that's where cricket boards need to be better going ahead.
Fair enough. Embers Assembling, what a name, asks, should franchises be reluctant about signing players from countries that often revoke NOCs like Pakistan and Sri Lanka? Absolutely. I think they're already reluctant, aren't they, Jared?
Yeah. So Sri Lanka was one that I think when I was with the CPL, we signed a bunch of Sri Lankans and they all got taken out. And I remember two of the owners talking, just going, we just won't do Sri Lankans anymore. You know, it was that brutal of, and it was nothing against the talent of the players or anything, you know, that was CPL. So the Sri Lankans at that stage, they had some really good players that could have helped the CPL teams, but it's like, it's so hard to plan if you don't know who you're going to get. And the problem is that teams don't always do auctions correctly. And, you know, have a look at Delhi recently and even Kolkata, right? So sometimes the player that becomes available for you afterwards is the better player. That happens a lot in those franchises, but sometimes you just can't get a like-for-like player. I'm trying to think of who the player was that we were trying to play, because we had Dustin Shanaker and we had Nirushan Dikwala, and we just had a real trouble replacing one of them. I can't remember which one it was.
I should have gotten McGrath ahead of Shanaker, right? Like for like.
I think it was Shanaker that we couldn't replace because I think Andre Fletcher took the gloves. So we still had a keeper in the squad. But yeah, you know, you suddenly find yourself in these positions of like, oh, there's no one free on the market who does this role that we need to be filled now anymore. But there was someone else in the draft that we could have got, or the auction that we could have got, right? Mm. It's like, well, that's terrible. That's not how this sport should go. So if that's the case, you're better off to take the other player first before the other team takes him and do that. And you have, I will say this, Embers, there are incredible conversations. I would say the one thing that cricket does pretty well when it comes to drafts and auctions is the conversations between agents, players, and sometimes boards, players, agents, and the teams. Just going, is this guy really available? Are you going to pull him out? Blah, blah, blah. That's the only time I've really seen these people just hit the phones to try and work out if this guy's actually going to be available or not. And agents usually have the right information, but even agents can be caught out with like, no, we talked to the board. The board said he can play in this tournament. And then like a week later, it's like, we can't get an NOC.
Yeah, very recently it happened to Mohammad Haris, right? Went to Bangladesh, was about to play a game and then got pulled out. So imagine that. Darth Vader with the final super chat of the day says, is there any appetite for a second tier T20 competition in Australia with some of the smaller cities and with possible involvement from a PNG team? Would a Papua New Guinea team fare well in such a competition?
Oh, I think they'd struggle, but they've certainly got some good players. Look, there's the Baby Bash in Australia, which I think is still going, which is a second tier competition. Well, I always thought it was a really clever idea, and I almost followed it more than the Big Bash at times back in the old days when I had to find players coming up. I don't think you'd make any money off that tournament, though. It really is a development league. So then do you want to then, who pays for PNG to come in? is the interesting one. So PNG, Vanuatu are two teams that, you know, could play in that kind of league. New Zealand should have teams in that league as well. But whether you can make money off it, and we've seen that before with, you know, minor league baseball and, you know, smaller divisions in football and the G League in the NBA. It's really hard to make money off those leagues at times and also keep them professional. So, you know, you hear these horror stories about minor league baseballers. That's the issue. Can you do it to a point where it's still professional, knowing that you're not going to make that much money from it? I would probably watch it though. I would love development leagues. You know, I used to watch the Karnataka League. I've watched the Tamil League before. I watch the Blast still now, even though the 100 is around. So I do follow that, but I'm like one of eight people in the world who give a shit about these things.
Also, back in the day when Pakistan used to have the Faisal Bank T20 Cup, I believe that Afghanistan used to have a team for a couple of seasons in between, which did kind of help them back in the day.
Pakistan did have that under 23 league, whatever it was recently. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The PJL, Ramiz's baby.
I was about to into that, and then they canceled it. So anyway.
Yeah. It was unfortunate. But yeah, that kind of wraps up everything on Uncovered for this week. Just a quick reminder to all of you, you can go to goodareas.co, bookmark that webpage because it can prove to be your one-stop shop for all the work that we do as a team, whether it be written content, videos, or podcasts. Thank you to everyone who came in the comments and sent us super chats, and your interactions are valued. If you enjoyed this episode, do give us a like and subscribe to both this YouTube channel and Jared's other channel on YouTube. We'll be back next week with another episode of Uncovered. That is all for now. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vasudevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recording. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, you will need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up great clips from your podcast chats and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.